All right, good afternoon, everybody. We're about to get started. I love these spread out rooms on both sides. Nobody ever comes to the middle. They all go all the way out to the edges. Never fails. So there's a few number of people here. You all do know we're going to talk about OAuth, right? That's what you came to hear. You're sure about that? All right, because I expected like 10 people, because this is such an exciting topic. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and get rolling. Let's do a little bit of the housekeeping up front. First of all, this is a session on OAuth, so let's get a feeling of who's here. How many of you are developers? Excellent. Administrators, IT pros, a few? Okay. Who came in just to take a nap in the back for a quiet spot? Perfect. All right, so this is primarily a developer session. However, we are going to cover a number of topics. This is one of those areas of SharePoint where it crosses over between IT pros, admins, and developers. Both of you need to understand this. There's a fair amount of concepts that you need to grok in order to do this effectively, both on-prem and in the cloud. We're going to primarily talk about the cloud today, but we're also going to cover on-prem a little bit and what the variances are. Developers, bear with me through the early portion where we talk about all the concepts and fundamentals. This stuff is really, really important. I know it's not exciting, it's not cool code, and we're not creating an app to cure cancer or give everybody free beer. But it is stuff that we absolutely have to understand, and it's a real pain point if you're starting to develop apps, and so you need to understand it. So bear with me, and then we'll get to some code samples at the end, and then I'll publish out all the code samples for you to borrow and use. All right, how many of you have written a SharePoint app already? Ooh, excellent, okay. How many of you are on-premise? Okay, oh, a bunch. Office 365 only. Oh, wow. Hybrid? Cool. Excellent. All right. So there were like three hands for Office 365 only. So now I'm going to have to redo the deck and talk only about on-prem since nobody's in the cloud. No, concepts are equally applicable. OAuth is in more places than you think it is, even on-prem. And at some point, you will be writing stuff for the cloud, whether you like it or not. And so this is important stuff to understand. Okay. Starting, here's all the stuff about me if you want to know how to get a hold of me. A couple of things that I want to mention. Down at the bottom, you can hit my blog at SharePointCowboy.com. Feel free to leave me a message there. I'm reasonably good about responding to comments there. You can email me. That's the best way. Put TechEd or something in the subject line. I'd be happy to answer your questions as and when I have time. If you want to get me on the social networks, so I'm at facebook.com/spcowboy. You can hit me on Twitter at eshups. However, let me warn you, for those of you who know me, I don't spend a lot of time on social networks. To me, social is standing in the pub with a beer in my hand. And if you want an answer from me, the best way to get it is to buy me a beverage. My answers get more interesting the more I have, by the way. You can hit all of my presentations on slideshare.net. These slides are available to you on the TechNet site, but I will post them up to SlideShare later this afternoon for you to have, and the code samples will be on my blog shortly thereafter. Please do feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. If you don't get a response right away, please reach out to me again. I'm not ignoring you, but I get a lot of emails, as most of the other speakers do. So be persistent, and I will eventually respond to you. Here's what we're going to talk about today. We'll do a little introduction about OAuth in general. Then we'll cover some of the fundamentals, how it's implemented in SharePoint, and then how we apply it in the apps that we're building, both for on-prem and for the cloud. So let's get started with the intro. First of all, what is OAuth? Has anybody in here written a Facebook app or a Twitter app? Anybody? Okay, a couple of folks. The history of OAuth is it was created primarily by the Twitter folks in conjunction with the OpenID group at Google, and it sort of grew out of a collaborative effort with those folks. But the purpose of it was to provide authorization for applications, primarily those plugging into various frameworks or from application to application, without the need for authentication. OAuth is very much like a valet key for an app. So if anybody in here has bought a really high-end car, you typically get a valet key with it, which allows the person to drive the car for like 5 miles or something, but they can't open the trunk. They can only go so far, right? There's a limited set of permissions that they're granted to the vehicle with this specific key. OAuth follows the same principle in that you grant an application access to another application and it requests a certain set of permissions. It's then up to you as the resource owner to agree to those permissions or to deny them. In some cases, some apps will allow you to selectively enable certain permissions. We have all seen this happen on Facebook and Twitter when we've gone to log in, and it will say, this app wants to post things to your timeline, bug all of your friends, send your sensitive data to the NSA, right? And we just say yes and continue on, and it goes and does all the things we don't want it to do. We are enabling it to take action on our behalf. What OAuth most unequivocally is not is authentication. OAuth has absolutely zip zero, nothing to do with authentication. An authentication provider will validate your credentials. That's Live, Facebook, Twitter, Google, one of these other services, primarily OpenID providers. You will enter a username and a password with that provider, and then OAuth will get authorization from you to utilize services from that provider, but it is not authentication. Now, all of us are guilty of mixing up these two terms. I will probably slip up and say authentication at some point today. We all do it. But OAuth is authorization and authorization only. If anyone tells you differently, smack them upside the head and tell them you're wrong. Eric said so. All right, why do we need it? Well, let's go back a couple of years to the Wild Wild West scenario of every website we visited wanted a username and password, right? You probably have these apps in your own corporate environment and they drive you crazy. You've got credentials all over the place. All of us somewhere have a list of our usernames and passwords for 100 various different sites, right? And we can never remember what one is, and we're resetting a password and back and forth all the time, and we end up using the same password for a bunch of different sites because it's easier for us to remember. And then as soon as someone gets a hold of our password, right now they can get to everything that we do on the net. So OAuth was designed to mitigate this scenario by simplifying credential management. The idea is that you log into one authentication provider one time, and then you authorize various activities from various apps to function. So think of it as Active Directory, if you will, and all of your applications being Active Directory aware. Now, in Microsoft's perfect vision of the world, every application everywhere would use Active Directory, and we wouldn't have a need for all of this stuff, but that's not how things work out in the real world. Part of the idea here is to minimize the vulnerability surface. So if you have a large number of passwords, you tend to keep them as simple as possible so you can remember them, which means they're relatively easy to hack, potentially, or you use one combined set of credentials and so a hacker can get to everywhere if they compromise your password. So that's a lot of vulnerability. The idea behind the authorization scenario is that we minimize that vulnerability because you're only logging into one place or a small set of authorization providers. In addition to that, it was also fairly obvious, especially on the social networks, that we needed some way to control what all these various apps were doing. So it's not just enough, it's not a great scenario to authorize an app to act like you and take over your complete Facebook feed, for example. Okay, you don't want apps that are doing that. Initially, back in the early days of OAuth, that's kind of what happened. And then we came up with the idea to say, you know what, let's have a set of permissions, like a claim that says these are the things the app is allowed to do, and we as the user have to authorize whether or not they happen. That's a better scenario than just carte blanche access to the application that we're authorizing against. It also allows us to define explicit trust relationships. So we're saying specifically that my big time waster app has a specific trust to do things on my behalf in Facebook. And at some point, if I get sick and tired of that time waster and I want a new time waster, I can turn off the old one and enable the new one. So somewhere I have a list of all the applications that are trusted to do things on my behalf. In SharePoint 2013, this is actually a huge issue because on-prem configuration requires us to define trust relationships, what we call server-to-server or S2S. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Developers, how many of you were in Jeremy and Fabian's session this morning on configuring apps? Okay, a few people. I'm going to touch a little bit on that. I'm not going to cover it in depth like they did. I would recommend, if you want to know how to put some of this stuff into practice in the apps that you're building, especially for on-prem and hybrid on-prem, go back and look at their session this morning. I think it was 10, 15 or so this morning. And they give you some more practical scenarios, especially around the on-prem story. Obviously, we wanted to, part of the objective here is to expand interoperability, make it so multiple systems can work together, and we have as few competing frameworks as possible. With OAuth 2.0, that sort of lost its focus, and we've got a lot of vendor-specific implementations, but that's still the underlying principle. The idea was to decrease API complexity. I'm not going to say we really achieved that idea. However, I will say if you understand how to build for OAuth in certain, how to build applications to use OAuth, you can pretty much figure out how to build one for SharePoint, Office 365, or for Facebook, or for Twitter. The implementations are very similar. Okay, security. So OAuth, believe it or not, was primarily designed for secure communications over HTTP. Who does that? It also works over HTTPS, but it doesn't require that both of the endpoints are secured. And that was to give it greater adoption and to drive it so that any application could utilize the framework without enforcing an SSL requirement. In most cases, you will see it over HTTPS. However, if you read the protocol, it all talks about HTTP in the initial 1.0 spec. What comprises OAuth? Well, it's a combination of digital signatures, identifiers, tokens, we're going to say that a lot, and secrets. We'll see this in the on-prem implementation. Tokens are primarily what you're concerned about. What are the risks in OAuth? Well, there are several. The best well-known vulnerability for OAuth is man-in-the-middle attacks. We all know about these. We've seen them out there in the wild. This is where somebody's sitting in between and capturing traffic that they can replay. The other difficulty with OAuth is it relies heavily on a private key scenario. If someone compromises your private key or your token, individual token, they can act on your behalf and you'll never really even know it. Okay? So that's a significant drawback to the protocol. There's a couple of new vulnerabilities that we've seen applied to OAuth. Session fixation is one. Where we can grab, because we're passing tokens back and forth in post operations, going back and forth between websites and clients, you can grab that session information and replay it if you're sitting on the wire in between. And the one that just came out, what was it about last week, was the whole covert redirect issue where you can actually create an app that looks like another app, trick people into logging in. If you understand the token process, you can grab those tokens and then you can act on behalf of the user. And we're going to decode some tokens later and I'm going to show you exactly how that sort of thing can happen. You need to be aware of these vulnerabilities. In a corporate scenario, these probably aren't as big of a deal. They're more of a big deal out in the consumer space where you have a lot of people who are very security unconscious. However, we all have that user in our organization that will click on any link sent to them in any email anywhere without first thinking about it, right? And so some of these can be applicable. All right, what are the fundamentals of OAuth? Let's go over some concepts here so the stuff later on will make sense. We start with a resource owner. This is the object in the chain that grants access to a protected resource, a protected resource being an app. We have a resource server. The resource server hosts the protected resource and accepts access requests. We then have a client. This is the application making requests on behalf of the resource owner. This is typically your browser. And then we have an authorization server. This is what issues the access tokens. And we'll look at how these apply in a SharePoint environment very shortly. Let's look at the flow using these actors in our scenario. So this is how it works. We have a client, that would be your browser, and we have a resource owner, an authorization server, and a resource server. All right, our authorization request is going to go to the resource owner. The resource owner is going to return an authorization grant. The authorization grant is then going to be passed on to the authorization server, which is going to return an access token. An access token is passed to the resource server, and then the protected resource is granted to the client. So this is the high-level flow as it happens. This is what's called three-legged OAuth. Here's how it acts in real life. So we have a user, we have an app, and we have a provider. So the first step is the user requests access. We've seen this happen before. You click on an app, and it takes you to a screen that says, please log in with your OpenID, whatever, whatever, right? And what it does is the app is requesting a resource token on the back end when you log in from that provider. The provider then returns a request token, builds a link to the app in the middle builds a link and passes it back to the browser, okay? The user then clicks on that link. The request URL is passed the provider, and the provider returns an access token. With that access token, you have a new URL now. You pass it to the app. The app validates the access token with the provider. The access token, or the user is granted access, and then you have, and then you have access to that resource. This is three-legged OAuth. This is the most common implementation. You don't always see this happening when you're in the browser. It's sort of churning behind the scenes, but if you pop open Fiddler and see what's happening, you'll see that you get a response back. There's a link. It follows a redirect to that, and then you get an access token back. And then you can move on to access that app. That's what's happening in SharePoint when you have an app and you click on the app tile and it says app redirect and the screen flashes a few times and then your app finally comes up. That's what's going on behind the scenes is this process. There's also something known as two-legged authorization. This is actually what SharePoint does when you're in a high-trust on-prem scenario. Instead of the part in the middle where we have the multiple redirect thing happening, we have a two-legged authorization process where we request a request token, it's returned with an access token, and then the access token is passed and grants validation. So two ways to implement it, and SharePoint actually does both. Is that clear as mud now? Everyone's got a handle on that? Okay. Let's see it in action, and it'll make a little bit more sense, I think. Okay, in SharePoint, how is OAuth implemented in SharePoint and Office 365? Well, the biggest advantage is that it provides integration without a bunch of multiple logins. So we don't have to log into somebody's app. So think about this scenario. We want everybody to build apps for SharePoint. But if everybody who built an app had their own SQL membership provider, right, we would always be logging in to all these separate apps because we're not going to grant them access to our Active Directory environment, right? So we would have to always be logging in, right? And we'd have this terrible scenario. Everyone would have to manage their own authentication, and it's a huge hassle. So in the SharePoint sphere, OAuth provides us the capability to integrate without going through that multiple login process and allows us to build apps without thinking about authentication, right? Now, grok that for a minute. When we built classic ASP and .NET apps, we always had to have some authentication provider, right? We had to communicate to AD, or we had to implement SQL membership providers or whatnot. Now when we're building app in the new online app world, we don't have to worry about that stuff. It also enables server-to-server communication. So on-prem in SharePoint, we don't have what's called an IPSTS. I'll talk about that here in a few minutes. So we need a better way to manage server-to-server communication without having them to actually authenticate to each other. We do that through a set of server-to-server trusts, which is mostly a certificate exchange process, but they're still implementing OAuth between those server resources, which really just defines the trust relationships that says it's okay for SharePoint to talk to Exchange or for Workflow Manager to receive requests from SharePoint, et cetera. And finally, underlying it all, OAuth supports the app model. So if you're building apps for SharePoint, you got to understand this stuff. Okay, here's some concepts, some specific concepts that you'll see tossed around in all of the documentation. So let's bring some clarity to this. Starting with an identity provider. An identity provider manages identity information for principals. The security token service handles requests for trusted identity claims. If you've set this up on-prem, then there's some PowerShell that you have to run, and you have to set up a new STS, and that's what the security token service is doing. We then have an identity token issuer that is the associated with a web application. So unfortunately, one of the drawbacks that we have in this implementation is that it's all URI-based. So we have to associate our STS with a specific web application. So we have to have an instance of that for each web application that we've deployed. You'll see a lot of new guidance coming out about, for example, My Site scenarios, where you have My Sites underneath your primary web application for your portal, for example, whereas in the past we always said do two of them. There's different reasons for that. There's some claims reasons for that. But also by consolidating those, we minimize the amount of surface that we have to create STSs and whatnot for our apps, and just makes it easier to deploy. We have a security token issuer. This is who's actually handing out the tokens to the browser request. That's our trusted resource. There's two options for configuring when you're doing trusts on-prem. One is to do it by certificate exchange. The other is to do metadata endpoints, which is a JSON request that actually, in the end, all it does is a certificate exchange. But you'll see the metadata endpoints described in the PowerShell scripts. And so what they're actually doing is pulling a certificate and sending back the thumbprint of the certificate and just making it easier to do that exchange. A request token is the first token that we ask for. It's our ticket at the door where we come and say, I am supposed to be here, and handing them our ticket. Okay. In return, we get an access token. When someone has validated the ticket and looked and said, let me see your ID. Yes, you are Eric Schupps. You are on my list. It's okay to be here. They'll hand us another access ticket and say, show this to the guy inside and you can get a drink at the bar. Okay. That's our second piece, which is our access token that gets back to us. So there's verification, right? And then there's allowed in for access. This one's kind of kooky. What is a realm? A realm is simply an identifier that we're providing to say this is the scope of the authorization. Okay. So typically we have created a realm and associated it with a web application or an STS, and that is the scope of our permission. So we're saying you can do something within this particular realm. In Office 365, your realm is your tenant. Okay. And then finally, when we're online, Azure ACS is what actually does all the work behind the scenes for us. Azure ACS creates our tokens, validates our tokens, issues access tokens, etc. It is our identity provider in the cloud. Okay, on-premise, we skip this part because it doesn't exist, although hybrid, you can actually do it. There's a demo from this morning's sessions that Fabian and Jeremy did that shows you how to actually auth via hybrid coming on-prem, going out to Office 365 so you can use Azure ACS and coming back through. You really don't want, unless you're really, really bored and have nothing better to do, to try and set up your own ACS implementation on-prem. That's pretty painful. So instead, for trust relationships on-prem, we skip this part, and the STS that you define in the trust on-prem is how we authorize our tokens. We're basically telling it it's okay to do this without having to validate identity. What are our scenarios? Well, we use this for farm-to-farm communication. We use it for server-to-server communication. If you're talking to Azure from SharePoint on-prem, or if you're going from SharePoint to Workflow Manager, or if you're going to Exchange, you have to configure the trust relationships. And then, of course, we use it for our apps. Okay. Just a quick piece on how things differ when you're on the two platforms. So on-premise, we do what's called high trust, or S2S. You'll see them used interchangeably in the documentation. Okay, this is where you're explicitly defining relationships that happen inside of your farm scenario. On-premise, we don't have high trust. We have a low trust scenario. So we have Azure ACS and our apps communicating with Azure ACS. Okay, we don't do high trust online, and we don't do low trust on-prem. All right, so let's take an actual scenario of how SharePoint handles these requests. And for this particular piece, I need 4 volunteers from the audience. Okay, don't be shy, come on. A few people get up, I need 4 people. Come on, come on. I've got one. Have I got another one here? Let's get these 2 guys right here, we're good. Okay, y'all come over here. All right, you on the left here, right here. Okay, you right here, and we'll put you right here. Okay, excellent. All right. So what we have here is we have our browser. Here's our client right here. This is the guy that wants to do some stuff. All right, your SharePoint, lucky you. Okay, pre-SP1, so you still actually work. Now we have Azure ACS. Here's our ACS right here, and on the end we have our actual cool super duper app that provides free beer to everybody, or coffee in this case. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to follow the token authorization process down this chain as it happens in SharePoint. And to do that, we're going to use a token. So here's my token. The token starts with the browser. Okay, so the browser is going to make a request for SharePoint. There's a pretty square tile, and he's going to click on it and say, I want to go to the super duper app. So the first thing that happened is the request goes to SharePoint. SharePoint now has the request. What is SharePoint going to do with the request? What does it need to generate first? A request token, right? So the person that SharePoint has to talk to is Azure ACS. So he's going to pass it to Azure ACS. Azure is going to say, yes, I know who you are. I will build a request token for you, but that request token is in the form of a URL that you have to hit. So ACS is going to pass the token back to SharePoint. SharePoint, in turn, is going to say, I know what to do with this. I'm going to give it to my client. The client now says, ah, I have a request token. I can ask for permission to do what I need to do. So I'm going to pass the access, my request with an access token back to, back to the app. So the token goes to the app because the app now has to verify that it's okay to let this user in. And it does that with the request token. So the request token, who handles tokens? Azure ACS. So the request token goes to Azure ACS. Azure ACS is going to say, yep, this is the request token that I gave you. I can now give you an access token. And the access token would go back to the app. So the app goes back there. Okay, now, here's where it gets a little bit murky. You would think that the access token would go right back to the client, yes? That is not actually what happens. First, the access token goes to SharePoint. Because SharePoint is your actual STS. It is your secure token service. It has to be validated in SharePoint as well. SharePoint will then build the final URL that redirects to the app web. So that access token then goes back to the app. The app, right, now has the access token, and it can do what? When it finally has an access token, what is the whole point of the app? To establish, anybody know? No? Client context. Because you can do nothing in an app with SharePoint without client context. So the final thing that the app does is it sends it back to SharePoint, hand it to SharePoint right there. SharePoint says, nope, SharePoint, hang on to it. SharePoint says, yes, you have client context. You may now make your REST or .NET calls or however you want to do it. So it gives it back to the app. The app says, cool, I've got client context. I can now pass data to who? The guy who's been out of this since the very beginning, which is our browser in the first place. So the token finally goes back to the browser, and now the user has some information like, hello, SP admin, nice of you to come to my app. Make sense? A little more sense? Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your help. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on. All right, let's see how this is actually applied. So I just mentioned context. The whole point of this entire process is to establish context. Because without context, we can't talk to SharePoint. Remember that our apps can be running around out in the wild somewhere on Azure, on some malicious dark web website somewhere. We have no idea where these apps are coming from. So without some sort of context to say, what are you supposed to be talking to? What is the protected resource that you're after? We can't do a whole lot. So let's look at, first of all, on on-prem. Okay. How does this work on-prem? Let me walk you through the process here. Okay. So here's our on-premise scenario. The user browses to the app. SP returns the parameters. It then posts the parameters to the app. The app requests an access token from SharePoint, not from Azure ACS. And what it's doing is it's talking to the STS that you've configured in the PowerShell and saying, is it okay for me to provide access to this resource? So the STS that you configure is actually faking the identity, if you will, because you've pre-configured it and told it it's okay to provide access requests in this realm. It then validates that S2S trust as yes, there's a trust that's been configured, and the app establishes context. If you're having difficulty with your on-prem apps and getting them to work, especially in production, not in dev where you can just F5 and it creates a certificate for you, but actually in production, this is where your problem lies, in the configuration of your S2S. And I'll show you a PowerShell script about how we configure that in a relatively straightforward fashion. If you've configured an on-premise app, you know that there are four things that you need in your web config. Can anybody tell me what those are? I'll give you the first one, client ID. What else? Client secret. What else? Certificate, PFX location, and the ugly one, password. Ooh, nasty. There's a password in my web config. Not good. Why do we need those four things? Because we're acting as an identity on behalf of the user, we have to authorize this app in our environment. To do that, we have to do the whole AppRegNew process. If we're sideloading it, not through a developer site, but putting it, say, in the corporate catalog, we have to do set up a client ID and a client secret and a redirect URL, right? And those have to be in our web config. Because I don't have an identity provider, I don't have Azure ACS, I have to set up these communication points beforehand and basically tell everybody it's okay to talk to each other. That's why you need those components in an on-prem implementation. Online and Office 365, it follows the pattern that we just looked at when we're walking through our scenario. So we're requesting a token from an ACF, sending it back to the browser, posting it, access token, context, etc. So that's the scenario that we just walked through. Okay, and it differs because we have at ACS in the mix, it's actually our identity provider that we're talking to. Okay, let's look at how we actually establish context. So you've waited 30 minutes and we're finally going to get into Visual Studio. So let me switch over if I can find the right one. Everybody see the right one? All right. So we're going to look at a HITRUST app and how we establish context. So the code is actually very simple. This is a big room, so let's change something here real quick. Let's make it so it's a little easier to see all of this stuff. There we go. Okay, so a little bit easier. All right. So on-prem environment, we're going to establish context. So there's a pretty easy way to do this in Visual Studio 2013. We have this nifty little call that says SharePoint context provider, get SharePoint context, and it uses the HTTP context. Unfortunately, this kind of masks what's going on behind the scenes, and this is a very important point for a production deployment. Instead of doing that, this is the auto-generated code that it gives you. Let me show you what's actually happening here behind the scenes. In order to establish context, we have to have two pieces of information on-prem. We need the host URL and we need the app web URL. And we all know the difference by now, right? App web is that funky, weird thing that it creates to have a separate application domain and does the weird permission copy, and it's strange and doesn't make any sense, and you get that funky URL dash and some random number, right? The host URL is where the user actually was and where they expect to be. That's the SharePoint site that they were on. In order to validate context, we have to pass in the URL, in this case the host URL, to establish our client context. But what's really super important on-prem, what's that say in the middle of it? Windows identity. What does that mean? Four letters we've all learned to love and loathe, NTLM. If you're hosting your apps on-premise, the only way to establish context, you can write your own if you want, the only way to establish context with the provided token helper is via NTLM. We have to have authorized apps. There has to be a login process. So it's getting a Windows identity. Can you do this with forms? Yes, you can. Do it with forms, as long as you have your forms authorizing to Active Directory and LDAP provider, something that the identity model can create a Windows identity from. Okay? This is the important difference. If you look at some of the old documentation, you'll actually see this, and unfortunately there's still some of that out on TechNet and MSDN. You'll actually see this quite a bit. It's recently been replaced by the 2013 stuff that obfuscates this behind the scenes, okay? However, if you weren't prepared for this and you tried to set up a production on-premise app and you didn't secure it with NTLM, your stuff's gonna break and you can't figure out why. Right? If any of you have read my mile and a half long walkthrough of how to set up high trust apps on-prem, I tell you this, if you have trouble sleeping, a little insomnia, hit my blog, look for the setup on high trust, 5 minutes, you're gone, I guarantee it. It works perfectly. All right, this is the important bit to remember, is that you need to have a Windows identity on the back end to make that work. And part of that process are these four pieces that we talked about here. The client ID, you have to pre-configure this in AppRegNew along with a client secret and pass that in your web config, and then you need to have the certificate path and the password. Token Helper will handle all this stuff for you. It gets generated automatically when you set up a new provider-hosted on-prem application. But you need to have these four pieces, okay, which requires you to export your certificate and have it in some localized location where you can get to it. So if you're running out in Azure somewhere, this is where your web role is going to live. You need to make sure that that certificate gets copied out to your web role so that it can talk to the endpoint that you're calling back into SharePoint. Okay, so establishing context is actually relatively easy once you understand the various pieces that you need. When you go to create a new project, this is what you will get, which is something very simple, which is just do the SharePoint context provider and get SharePoint context. Now this particular, let me come back to my high trust demo. So this particular demo right here, okay, is living on my IIS server, so this is a production deployment. This is an important piece because when you do this in Visual Studio, it asks you about certificates and then you can just F5 and deploy. That's only gonna work in the localized IIS host. If you wanna do it in production, you have to make sure you have the certificates copied out there and the various piece parts that happen. But I can browse to, say, let's come to my portal, right? And then I can come to my developer site. It's dev, okay. Now I'm gonna clear out Fiddler and we're gonna hit our app. Here's our high trust demo. And if you're watching pretty closely, you'll see the you'll see app redirect show up. It's in the URL, it's passing a token. Boom, here my application comes up. This is running on IIS on the machine in a production scenario. What's happening behind the scenes that you will see when we look here in Fiddler is when it hits my app and tries to browse to it, you're going to get a, it's going to pass in some parameters. Boop, here we go. It's going to pass in my host URL, language client tag, product number, etc. What's not in this request is a request token because SharePoint knows that you've deployed an on-premise app. So it's not going to pass you a request token when you're on-premise. It only passes you a request token when you're in Office 365. The way we establish the identity is the Windows client context, and that allows us to get the context because we have predefined that relationship. The way that we define that relationship is in this PowerShell right here. That may be a little hard to read at the back of the room. So in order to make this happen, we have to predefine a trust that says it's okay for it to function. Here's the PowerShell that makes it happen. You must have a certificate. In dev, this can be a self-signed certificate, not a problem. In production, it needs to be real. It can be a wild card. I would prefer a subject alternate name rather than a wild card, but it can be a wild card if you wish, if you're doing a lot of apps, or it can just be individualized. You need an issuer ID, which is a GUID that you create. You need a web application. So here's my web application, right, which creates my realm. I then give it a parameter for the certificate, so it's going to go get PFX certificate from this one that we've exported here. And now I'm going to create a new trusted root authority. and I'm going to give it a name with that certificate. The Trusted Root Authority functions, if you will, as my ACS that says it's okay. It's going to handle the token requests, and it's going to process them. We're going to create an issuer, which is the issuer ID and the realm. And then we're going to create the STS, and this is what actually handles all of our token requests right here, given an app principal, and then we're going to set the permission, if we like, for that app principal. Once we've gone through this PowerShell and set this up, we can now deploy a production app on-premise with our trusts in place. Okay, and I'll include the PowerShell in the bundle. It's documented out there, but I'll put it in the code ball so that you have it so you can set up your own on-premise trusts. Okay. Moving along. Let's talk about these funny little things called tokens, because this is the meat and potatoes of the whole thing. Request tokens and access tokens. This is what it's all about. On-premise. Online. On-premise. We do a request parameters, we get the claims from our Windows identity, we get our access token with S2S, establish the client context, and we're done. On-prem, we have to make we get the post parameters from SharePoint, we parse out the context token, we read and validate the context token, we get the access token, and then we can get the client context. So this is how we're processing the tokens within that multi-step process we looked at before. Token Helper will do this for us on the back end. But when you're troubleshooting and trying to figure out what's going on, you oftentimes have to do some of this token management yourself so you can figure out what's in the tokens and what isn't. The request tokens are pretty well documented. What's in the request tokens? It's a JSON web token, and you can look on Kirk Evans' blog and a couple other places that talks about what those are. Access tokens, not quite as obvious because you have to decode them on a scenario basis. But lucky for you, I have written an app to do that for you. Okay, you can thank me later. Okay, let's look at a token. What do these tokens look like and what's in them? Well, let's start with, here's a standard request token with a whole bunch of stuff in it. JavaScript folks will recognize the lovely JSON format. Old school ASP people will go, dude, where's my XML, man? All right, it's all JSON. All right, here's the various parameters. Let's start at the top with the audience. This is your client ID. Remember, we set up a client ID when we were doing our S2S trust, client ID, client secret. If you've published an app into the app store, you will get assigned a client ID that you have to use for all of your apps. Okay, this is your client ID. Then we have the app URL. In this case, it's a local hosted one. If you're doing a provider hosted app out on the web, this will be your full URL that the app is connecting to. This is what goes in the field in AppReg New for remote host URL. We then have the tenant ID. In online or on-prem, this is the issuer ID that we set up with our own GUID in the PowerShell script. Online, this is your actual Office 365 tenant ID. We then have an ISS. Okay, what is an ISS? Well, there are four of them defined for Microsoft. There's SharePoint, Exchange, Azure ACS, and Link, the other one. There's four of them, and they follow a very specific format. And you'll see here Azure ACS is Charlie 000 in the middle. Okay. We then have our tenant ID again. Now, this should look familiar to you because in the script we just looked at, we had issuer ID and realm. Okay. That's exactly what we're setting up here and is part of the request token that we've predefined. We then have two date time values. We have a, I don't know why these don't say start and end, but instead they say not before in BF and expire. Whatever. Someone decided that was cool to do. Here's your start date, number of seconds since what year? Come on, Unix people, since what year? 1970, that's right. And then we have our expiration date. Same thing, second since 1970. We have a context sender. Check this one out. Frank 1, Charlie E00 is SharePoint. That's how you know it's coming from SharePoint. And then your tenant ID again. We then have the app context starting with the cache key. The cache key is used to prevent replay attacks. It's your user ID, issuer, app, and realm. Okay. We then have the security token service URI. Check this out. We're online, so it's accesscontrol.windows.net tokens OAuth 2. Any OAuth app that you build on the Microsoft platform is going to talk to this same URL. Okay? That's who you're passing the request to get the access token. And then finally, we have the actual payload, which is the refresh token. This is what's sent to your IPSTS, which is Azure ACS in this case. Okay, so this is what it passes on for it to talk to. And then finally, we have this little parameter down here at the bottom, right, that says, is browser hosted app? And what this is saying is whether the user initiated it, which is true via the browser, or if it was initiated by a remote event receiver. So in 2013, we have this new concept of remote event receivers where we can call out to our app to do stuff. Right? Well, those also have to use the OAuth process, but there's no browser in the chain to make the request. So all that process of token handling back and forth actually happens behind the scenes with a remote event receiver, and we're telling it here in our token whether there's an actual user involved or whether it came from an event receiver. Right? So this is stage one. This is where you present your credentials and say, here I am, what are you going to do with me? Stage two, after a bunch of stuff in between that happens on the back end, is you get back an access token. And this is what an access token looks like. So it starts with what's my type and my the algorithm that was used to secure it, in this case RS-256. And then we start with what's called an X5T, which contains a hashed value. And then, once again, we have our audience. Look at our format, right? Frank, Frank 1, Charlie Echo 00, that's SharePoint. We then have, and this one's important, our host web, not our app web, but our host web, okay? Some of the documentation, by the way, out there is wrong, and we'll show this using the current URL request space. That will get you in a lot of trouble. It doesn't actually work that way. It is using the host web URL. This is your actual context holding your protected resource. Remember, go all the way back to the beginning when we talked about our roles. This is your resource owner. That resource owner is registered with Azure ACS. You don't know that, but in Office 365 behind the scenes, it's communicating with ACS and registering your tenant. All right, and then finally we have the tenant ID. So I got my URL and my ID that I get back in my access token, because the access token then has to go to the app for it to validate that, yes, this is the right thing. We then have our ISS, which is Azure ACS in this scenario, followed once again by our tenant ID, issuer plus realm, our before and after, our start and expire fields. Then we have a name ID. This one's a little weird. This is your user principal name. This is your actual claims identifier here in this bit. And then you've got your STS ID and, once again, your tenant ID. You can also, if you wish, go deeper into this process and start extracting out the claims tokens that gets passed back and forth. That's also being handled on the back end. We're just going to talk about the request and access tokens here. So this is what a token looks like. Not only the one that you pass, but the one that you get back. Okay, so let's see that actually functioning, and I'm going to give you this code that will allow you to troubleshoot this process yourself. So let's switch back over. And we'll go to our OAuth demo. All right, so here's what we're going to do. As opposed to letting Token Handler handle this stuff behind the scenes for us, which is cool if you're building a .NET app. Well, what if you're building PHP or Java or something else, right? Well, then you don't get token helper, so you don't get all that goodness. You're going to have to do it yourself. That process of doing it yourself means you have to actually handle the tokens, parse them out, make your request, get your access token, and do that work. So let's look at how that functions. Now, this is .NET code. I am not a Java or PHP guy, so unfortunately, this is all I know. You'll have to translate this on the fly if you speak one of those other alternate languages. Right, let's dial this in so it's a little easier to see in the back. Okay, so the first thing we're going to start with when we want to get our tokens out and start debugging them is we need to get our context token. So there's a function in Token Helper that says get context token from request. It actually does some validation and stuff on the back end. You can use that if you wish, or you can just look at Token Helper and rewrite that process. It's basically breaking it out and verifying some stuff and munging the strings around in a little bit. And our inner text of that will be our request token. Okay. Online, this is passed as part of the process. Okay. So let me actually show you. So I'm going to go to this demo over here. If I can find it. And I'm going to look at a provider-hosted app, okay, running out on the web, if I've deployed the latest one, that is. This may or may not work. Maybe, if we're lucky. Okay, so this is actually out and running. This is an app that we built that's actually out in the store, talking to Office 365. I've clicked on it, and it's off and doing its thing. If I look in Fiddler, I can scroll down here and see where it first passed its parameters to me. So here's my default. I know this is hard to see. Here's my default ASPX, and it's passing in some post parameters. And one of those post parameters is this guy right here, our app token. This is what it's passing for the request. This is a request token. And it's this string that we have over here that's encoded, right? And what we're actually doing in our code here is we're breaking that apart and saying, let me get that token out of the request. So it's one of the post parameters and you can just grab it. You don't have to worry about decoding this, you just need to have it, okay? So that you can pass it on. However, if you want to rebuild this process yourself, you're going to need to process some information out of it. You're going to need to know the issuer ID in the realm. You're going to need to know who to send it to, which is our ISS, which is the URL for Azure ACS. That's all included in the token, so you'll know who to make the next request to. So here I'm parsing out the token. This is just for display purposes. You'll see it in a minute when I run the app, just so it's a little easier to read on the screen. The next thing that we have to do is we have to get our access token. So our access token, we're creating a new URI from the host web, not from the app web. And then we're going to call get access token, which makes a post request with some required parameters out to Azure ACS that will get the access token back for us. And I'm passing in the host authority, host URI authority here, which is our host URL, right? And I'm getting back an access token. Now, I have to decode that access token, right? It's coming back as a JSON web token. Out of the box, the identity model assemblies don't give you the ability to decode that web token. However, there's a NuGet package for that where you can get system identity model JWT. It's in the references here. For the project, you'll see it right here, System Identity Model Tokens JWT. It's a NuGet package you can get and add to your project. When you do that, you now have the ability to decode that JSON web token. So I can invoke a new security token handler and then just simply do read token, and allows me to get the string back out. Here's my read token process here. If you use the token handler method for this, there is one to do this. The problem is it's read and validate token, and if you're managing this yourself, it's going to fail because it won't be able to validate the audience for you. So what I did is I just parsed out the other validation stuff that token handler is doing so that you have a simpler implementation here. So we're first going to create a token handler, right? Read that token, set it up as a new JSON web security token, and get the SharePoint context token out of that. That's being used up here to parse our request token. All right, so all that's great. It's just a short sample bit of code, but what does it do for us? When I F5 this, what it's going to do is the provider-hosted app, it's running locally in this case, right? And now what it's going to do is it's going to spit back the information that we just looked through in the slide. So here it is live, right? Whoops. There we go. So here's our big old request token. There's that big old long encoded string. And then below it, what do we see? We see our audience. We see our tenant ID. We see Azure ACS as our, let's zoom in. We see Azure ACS here. Here's a token for that. Once again, our tenant ID, start, end, our context sender. Here's our issuer ID, which is SharePoint, right? And our realm, which is our tenant ID. And then there is where we do the post to. This is the information that you would need to parse out if you were managing this process yourself. Then finally, we have the request token, refresh token, which is the payload that we send to Azure ACS. The response that we get back looks like this. Once again, it's a big encoded string, and the data that we parse out of it is here. Here is SharePoint, here is our URL, here's our tenant ID, et cetera, et cetera. Here's our actor and whatnot down here. We would use this access token so that once we have this, the next step that we have to do if we're going to do anything with SharePoint is establish what? Client context, right? So we have to have this access token to then establish client context. So we would pass this access token to SharePoint so that it will give us context so that we can continue our operations. So if you want to debug that process and see what's going on inside your tokens, you can easily do so. You can write a little code yourself, or I'll probably clean this up eventually and put it out on the App Store so that you can have it for debugging purposes. But I want to add the claim stuff to it before I do that, so you can also look at the claims that are coming across. Okay? Does this make sense? Can we get some nodding heads, or we're all asleep by now and we're sick and tired of hearing about OAuth? Okay? I'm hoping this is making some basic sense now about what these tokens are and how they're going back and forth and what's actually in them. All right, let's flip back over. Okay, debugging. So let's talk about how we debug this process. What can go wrong when we're setting all of this stuff up? Well, a lot. The first and primary thing that will go wrong is you try to deploy an on-premise app and everything goes and nothing works, right? What can we do to debug that process? Well, there's several pieces to that. The first thing that we start when we're debugging an on-premise implementation is, if I switch to the right one here, there it is. The first thing that happens is we haven't properly set up this, which is our layouts 15 app reg new.aspx. Okay? We went to development and we spun up a new app in Visual Studio and we hit F5 and everything worked on our developer site. Rock and roll, it's all good. And then we tried to deploy it to production. Boom, nothing works. Whoa, what happened? Worked on my machine. It was awesome. It's got to be the admin's fault, right? Well, actually, it's not, because what you didn't do is you didn't get an app ID or an app secret. Or even worse, and I've seen this happen, you just went and generated a new one in production as opposed to the one you had in development. They're different. You have to change your web config. So when you generate these app IDs, you don't have to use SharePoint to generate these, by the way. Generate them in development and then just paste them into production. You don't have to use the ones that they give you. I don't have to hit the generate button. I know it's a button, and you want to click it because it's there. Okay? But you don't have to do that. Resist the temptation and just put in your app ID and app secret that were in your code all along right here in your web config. Okay? Do that, or give it to the admins and tell them to do it because they don't want us touching production because we're developers. We'll mess it up. All right? So give them these values and say, here, if you're so good, you know where to stick this. Go put it in there. I mean, where to place it appropriately in the portal. Okay? App domain and redirect URI, make sure you've got these right. Okay? Your redirect URI in development may be localhost, right, port, something or other, whatever. Make sure that this actually points to your production instance. So that's the first place that I usually see things go wrong. The other place that we often go wrong is that we don't forget to put in or have the wrong certificate path and or password. Got to make sure you have these. And make sure that your certificate is in a place that's accessible by the production web application. That could be Azure. That could be somewhere else hosted on your network. Make sure it's there. And then finally, on-prem, the piece that we get wrong is this bad boy right here. Right? In setting up the script, one of the things that I see happen all the time is you copy Eric's script and you run it twice, and now you've got two issuers with the same ID, right? Because instead of using GUID.newGUID every time you hard-coded it here like I did, right? And now you're going to have two with the same ID, and it's going to fail because your issuer ID and realm aren't going to match properly, okay? If you follow this script, and there's a number of them out there, if you follow this script, it's all guaranteed to work 99%. I'll give you the same SLA as Azure. It's guaranteed to work 99.9% of the time. Okay, the other 48 minutes of the year, don't call me, it's your problem. All right, So that's the other place where you go wrong, or you forget to do this. I'm guilty of this, done it, walked all the way through my scenario, thought I had everything configured, forgot to give the PowerShell to my admin to run so that it was all working properly in production. All right, that's online or on-premise. What are our troubles when we're trying to troubleshoot? What are the issues when we're trying to troubleshoot online? One of the things that I do all the time, because I got multiple stuff in the store, multiple store registrations, is I use the wrong stinking client ID in my app, right? Been there, done that. Make sure you keep track of what's being deployed where for what tenant, so you're using the right client ID. If you're setting up a developer site in Office 365 and you want to sideload your app, does everybody know how to sideload an app in Office 365? Okay, we need to talk about this. Okay, let's jump over here and jump into Office 365. Okay, so how many of you have tried to, you've set up a tenant, right? MySuperDuperTenant.SharePoint.com. Then you've gone into Visual Studio and you've put in MySuperDuperTenant.SharePoint.com and tried to press F5. Does it work? No, why? Because you have to have a developer site in order for that to work. Otherwise, they block you, right? Step number one online, make sure you've set up a developer site collection and you're not trying to deploy to production, because that root tenant, kids, is production, right? The admins love it when we deploy code to production, right? Right out of Visual Studio, they love it. That's why they block that scenario for us. Make sure that you've got the URL correct in Visual Studio when you're trying to F5. However, you don't have to F5 out of Visual Studio to deploy to a developer site. There is another way, and that way is to go to, let's go to our site contents, and we've got two libraries, right? One is called, if I can find it, one is called Apps in Testing, okay? These are apps that we're going to deploy. This is a .app package. When you hit publish in Visual Studio, brings up that nice little screen, right, and says, would you like to open the file location when you have published this? Of course I would. Shows you a .app file. In order to get it a new app to deploy, we first have to upload it into this special library called App Packages. So if I want to deploy one, I would, here's a Support Plus app that we just looked at, I would upload, and they very nicely give us an upload link here because we're not smart enough to figure out I can upload it myself. I need to have a big button. So you click upload and upload your app package here. Then you go back to the apps in testing, right? Click on it, come on. And then when you say new app to deploy, it will look in your list of app packages, say which one would you like to deploy? I would like to deploy this one. Here's the one I want on my list. And when you click that and choose deploy, it will pop up the screen that says, you have a new app to deploy. Do you trust it? You say yes or no, and you go through the app deployment process. So you don't have to F5 from Visual Studio, which in fact sometimes doesn't work. You can run into issues depending on what's going on in your corporate environment. So this is another way to get to your app deployment. However, you have to be in a development site in order to do this. The other way to make this happen is via the corporate catalog. So if you've set up a corporate catalog for your environment, you can upload your app packages into the corporate catalog. You can set whether you want it to be highlighted and this and that and the other, and then those will be deployed. To do that, you have to have set up your client IDs and secrets to make that happen, because it has to know what client ID it's going to use. Okay? So an alternative way for you to get those deployed. Okay, back to, was there a question on that? Yeah, go ahead.
What you just showed us, that is part of a development site tenant?
Yes.
Is there any way to create a site collection in a production tenant and turn that site collection into a...
So the question is, can we fake another site collection into being a development site collection?
Yes.
Right? In other words, are you asking, can we deploy to production?
Yes.
Didn't we just have this conversation? So to answer your question, there probably is. It's a set of features that get deployed as part of the site definition for the dev. If we broke apart the site definition We could probably figure out which features need to be deployed for that. You could write your own site definition for that if you're on-prem. So I think the answer is yes. You obviously wouldn't be able to fake that in Office 365 because you don't have access to deploying your own site definitions, right? But you potentially, I haven't tried that. I don't recommend it, okay? Is there a reason that you would want to do that in a production tenant as opposed to using a development site?
We have a lot of trouble with getting our AD sync, Azure AD sync, for the testing.
Mm-hmm.
Get a dev tenant.
Okay, your dev tenant should be using, oh, you're talking about setting up a separate tenant for dev.
Right.
Oh, okay, so I get it. You've got two separate tenants, which may not be using the same AD because when you spin them up, you get your own Azure AD instance, right? So the developer site is just a site collection that you can create in your existing tenant, and it's walled off from everything else, okay? So the idea would be in production, create a development site collection that you can do these deploys to. Now you're using your native Azure AD, right? And now I can see your scenario though, because if you're an individual developer developing apps, right, you have your own dev site tenant, so you don't have the AD sync that the customer has, and et cetera. In that scenario, if you're working with a particular customer to develop some apps, you could request that they create a development site collection for you. If you're putting something in the store and it's an Azure AD sync issue, that's hard to troubleshoot. Mm-hmm.
So we basically create in our production tenant a site collection that is a dev site collection for each developer.
Right.
And it's like,
right.
We have those deploy features. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that before.
So I'm going to make a controversial suggestion. I realize I'm being recorded here, so I have to be careful what I say. The change velocity in Office 365 is, from an SDLC perspective, less than optimal. There are things that happen in Office 365 deep in the dark of night that we don't know about, and suddenly our app stopped working, and the customer is saying, why is your app broken? And we're going, because I don't know, because they changed the REST API. Well, how am I supposed to control that? It's not my fault. Okay. Here's what I recommend. I know I'm going to catch some flack for this, and I have in the past. However, what I recommend from a pure development perspective is develop on-prem first. Unless you need access to a feature that is only available in Office 365, for example, some of the new REST APIs that are in the new tenant deployments that are not on-prem yet. If you need those, you don't have a choice. Otherwise, develop on-prem first in a controlled environment that you know isn't going to change overnight, so that you can get your basic core app functionality nailed down, then go to the cloud. Then you're troubleshooting problems that you know are happening sometimes outside of your control, right? It's an Office 365 issue. It's not necessarily your core app code. That is not a foolproof method, but I've been doing apps now for 2 years, and it's never failed me to deploy on-prem first. Yes, I have to set up the S2S stuff, and I have a little bit more pain, and I know it's still asking to get a development environment with SharePoint installed, and you know the admins hate that, and the network guys don't want to give you VM, blah, 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 blah. I get it. However, if you do that, your SDLC is much better because you're in a controlled, localized environment before you go to the cloud, and that can help prevent some of these issues. Okay, off my soapbox. Other troubleshooting issues. Persistence. This is a biggie. So that little process of getting a token and establishing client context, that's all great. It's excellent until the user goes from page one to page two. And then your client context goes gone. All right. Anybody tried this? He's laughing. He's done this. Okay. If we were all building spas in this beautiful new world, right, where everything happens on the client, this isn't a problem. For those of us doing real applications like in MVC, where we go from page to page to page, you know, users actually navigate to stuff, then when we go from page to page, our client context disappears. It's gone out of session. Okay. You have to handle that yourself. All right. In your application, you can do it as a cookie. Ideally, you use Session and your own data store for that. I realize that's not always applicable, and sometimes you have to use a cookie. Don't store it in Session variables, please. Try and persist it somewhere that you can do that. If you do set a cookie, time it out at a reasonable value, et cetera, right? But you'll hit that, especially if you're using like the MVC template that gives you a bunch of navigation pages. Boy, everything's good on page one default, and then you go to about and it breaks. Okay, so pay attention to your persistence and how you're managing that client context across requests. Context is my very next one. Okay, remember there are two types of permissions for SharePoint apps. There are user permissions and there are app permissions. If you don't specify the app the permissions in your app, it's going to act in the context of the user. So let's come back here and look at my demo. I'm going to look at my app file. Where's my other one over here? View code and switch. Okay, so look down here at the bottom. Okay, I have an app permission request in the bottom of this application. That app permission request is read from site collection in my namespace. When the little trust it screen comes up, it will say this app wants to access information about the entire site collection. Do you trust it? Yes, I do. Of course I do. Eric wrote it. I have to trust it. This will now have a permission for the app. It doesn't matter what user is using the app, it's going to pass in an app-only permission. Okay? And that app has rights to read the site collection. If you don't want that to happen, if you want it to act in the context of the user on the app web, not the host web, on the app web, then you have to, you don't specify this, and then it will act in the permission scope of the user. So there's two types of permissions. Make sure that you've got it scoped correctly for what you're trying to do. Think of this, think of app-only privileges, permissions as run with elevated privileges, okay, to a certain degree. You are providing a set of permissions that the app can access, or you're acting on behalf of the individual user. So bear that in mind when you're creating your apps. All right, so that's the last bit on permissions. I think we are technically at the end. We've got just a couple of minutes left. I am contractually obligated to go through these next slides, so please bear with me for 30 seconds. Okay, here's some more information. If you want to dig into this, here's some links you can go through. That insomnia problem, I guarantee it can be cured with the first two links. Okay, the OAuth specification is exciting reading. If you want some good controversy, right, if you like a little sauce and a little dish, okay, read up on OAuth 2.0 and the whole issues around why one of the original creators bailed on the OAuth 2.0 process and all that stuff. He's got a fantastic presentation called, and I kid you not, OAuth. I swear that was his presentation. Okay, watching it is really fun if you're an identity geek like me. It's fun to watch. Some other documentation that you can go through that talks about all the things I've talked about today, the apps and setting up trusts and all that sort of stuff. I mentioned it earlier, but I have a complete step-by-step walkthrough of doing an on-premise app from start to finish for HITRUST in SharePoint 2013. Okay, dev.office.com, this is where you go to get all the code samples and all the cool stuff. The Office Dev Center with the new Office 365 APIs, really cool stuff, especially if you want to talk to Exchange and work with the whole Office 365 stack, MSDN, code samples, patterns and practices, etc. So there's the links to all that. Here are the new app model samples that they provided. There's some really cool stuff in here, like how to provision sites remotely and this and that and the other. I also have another presentation. You can look at it on my slideshare.net on working with REST, where I have a complete set of sample code for doing list lookups, search, provisioning sites, uploading documents, right, using the user profiles. I have a whole SharePoint-hosted app built for that. You can go onto my blog at sharepointcowboy.com, go to code samples, and you can grab the code for that. There are some similar samples in the AMS that you can get as well. All right, related contents, here are some of the other breakouts. I recommend that you also look at, I'm not sure which one it was, but the earlier one from today, which was Fabian and Jeremy's session, which is, I think it's Build Connected Productivity Apps for SharePoint and Office. Okay. And B386, setting up your on-premises environment for app development. You definitely want to check that one out. Some hands-on labs if you want to go work with this. I know it's kind of the last day sort of thing, but you can boogie on over to the hands-on labs and have a go-through on those. And if you want to do the exams, here is the exam prep and all of the resources, Channel 9, TechNet, blah, 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 blah. And if you will complete your evals, you will win. But I'm telling you now, you can only win an Xbox if you give me all fives. Those are the rules, right? I will review those and recommend to the team they not give you an Xbox if you give me anything lower than a five. So I'm watching you. No, I'm just kidding. We run out of time. There'll be someone else coming in behind me. So what I'd like to do, I'll take some questions from you for a few minutes if you have some and you'd like to do some one-on-one, and then we'll move out into the hallway, and I'm happy to answer any additional questions that you have. Thank you all for showing up and sticking with me through this one. I appreciate it.